back with you after a time and some time away. We had a great time, but I will admit that, that first week with all of the things happening in our country, I missed being a part of this community to come and lament together. We just finished up a series on the Sermon on the Mount, and we return now to the lectionary text for the week, for a couple of weeks, and we'll see where we go from there. But we get this wonderful story of Jesus healing this woman who had been bent over for 18 years. And I love this story, but after spending some time with it this week, I have come to appreciate it even more. Let's pray. Holy and gracious God, in the midst of busyness, in the midst of work, in the midst of life, in the midst of to-do lists, we come into this place to find some space to be still, to sing your praises, to feast at your table and hear your word, to hear some good news. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be pleasing to you, and Lord our God, our rock, and our redeemer. So there's so many things we don't know about this woman in our gospel story today. All we know is that for 18 years, she has spent her days bent over, looking down at the ground, probably only able to see, you can imagine, only able to see people's feet as they walk by, and that only if they are willing to get close enough to her. We don't know her name. We don't know where she comes from or why she was in the synagogue that day. Did she come every Sabbath? Was she a regular attender? Did she have friends or family, maybe children? Or maybe she heard that that miracle worker, Jesus, was in town, and so she went to the synagogue. We don't know much, but we can make some educated guesses as to her experience. Based on what we know, we can speculate that she was probably pretty lonely. She was probably on the margins, if not cast out because of her condition, her bent overness, if you will. It most likely would have been thought to have been her fault, the result of some sin in her life that led to this condition. So she probably spent her days alone, looking down at the dust and the dirt, catching glimpses of sandals as she struggled along, rarely able to look in someone's eyes or look up to see the sun and the stars. But on this Sabbath day, she's in the synagogue and Jesus happens to and in the midst of his preaching, he glances over and he sees her. It's the first of what I think are three really important movements in the story. Because most likely this woman spent her days relatively invisible to those around her. Eyes would dart into another direction when people caught a glimpse of her. I mean, how often does this happen? Those bent over from a lack of housing or financial resources ask for money, and eyes are averted or phones aren't picked up. In this seemingly simple gesture, Jesus sees her. And that movement in being seen, I think a little bit of her dignity is restored. But when Jesus sees her, really sees how she is bent over, barely able to stand, in the second powerful movement, after seeing her, he stops. He stops what he's doing. He stops his teaching. He interrupts the liturgical movement, the worship. He stops everyone who had gathered that day in the synagogue. I can only imagine how awkward that moment must have been. But in that moment when Jesus sees this woman, he allows himself to be interrupted. He allows himself to have his routine, his teaching, his schedule, his time, his agenda. He allows it to be interrupted. Not only saw her, but in seeing her, he allowed this woman to make a claim on him. A claim on his time and everyone else's present that day. In this moment, Jesus prioritizes this woman and her experience over the protocol of worship and teaching, over everything else. As Luke Powery, who's the dean of the chapel at Duke, put it, this woman's presence pierces the normal protocol, and what Jesus reveals is that a person takes priority over the usual protocol. And then Jesus invites this woman over to him. He centers this woman in space. He centers this woman in the community. This woman for 18 years had found herself on the edges. Come over here, he says to her. And then I think in what is the third powerful movement of the story, Jesus frees this woman from what bends her over. He says, woman. Now, admittedly, it's a term that we might hear as dismissive, or perhaps even a little pejorative. But I wonder if instead it is meant to help to restore her humanity in her eyes and in the eyes of the community. It reminds her and everyone around her of her status as one created in the image of God. Woman, one created in the image of God, you are set free from your hands. And the woman immediately stands up straight, and in response to her being set free, this woman, after standing up straight, rejoices, praising God. Bless the Lord, O my soul. One of the things I've left out in this third movement that I am personally particularly convicted by is that it was not enough for Jesus to simply make the proclamation. It wasn't enough for him to say the right thing. For me, maybe to retweet the right thing, to post the right thing on Facebook. Now, in addition to speaking the truth of this woman's inherent dignity as being created in the image of God, in addition to proclaiming her set free from her bondage, from her bent overness, Jesus gets close to her. He gets close and reaches out and touches her. Some have imagined that in this moment, possible that Jesus even got down on his knees and then looked up into the woman's eyes as he reached out to touch her, saying, woman, you are set free. You see, proximity matters. It's not enough to say the right things. We are called to get close to those who are bent over. Those who are bound by circumstances and systems that diminish them, that distort them and wound them. Those who need to be free, who need liberation. Free movements. A willingness to see. An openness to having your life interrupted, to allow others to make a plan. On your time, your energy, your agenda, and three, to approximately can participate in helping to free people from that which bends them over. Of course, it's at this moment that this wonderful scene is interrupted, right? And we maybe get a sense of why this woman has been bent over for 18 years. Because as soon as Jesus heals this woman and she begins to praise God, the leader of the synagogue drowns out her praises with his objections. There are 6 days on which work ought to be done, people. Come on those days, Lord, and not on the Sabbath day, not today. He's angry because Jesus has disrupted the Sabbath. By centering and healing this woman, Jesus broke the tradition and the law and healed on the Sabbath, this day of rest. And of course, it's tempting, and I'm just as guilty as maybe all of us, it's tempting to heap all kinds of righteous indignation on this religious leader, right? I mean, how many times have we seen or experienced ways in which a legalistic commitment to tradition or the law has caused the church to be a place that keeps people bent over instead of helping them to stand up straight and flourish. Debbie Thomas puts it this way: why, when I think of the church, do I more often picture people bent over? Bent over under the weight of shame, judgment, invisibility, false piety, condemnation, prejudice, legalism, and harmful theology. Why don't I think of the church as a place where people are able to stand up on their own? Where they can come to have their dignity restored and their full potential realized? Is it any wonder that sometimes their experiences of being bent over to themselves, rather than run the risk of the possibility of shame and judgment? With all of this and our experiences, it's no wonder we tend toward a critical reading of this religious leader. But I think it's important to remember its context. He's helping to lead a people who are under Roman occupation. He's desperate to help them maintain their identity as the people of God. I don't think he's a bad guy. It's just that Sabbath keeping is one of the few things that marks them as the children of God and helps them remember who and whose they are in the midst of all of the other stories and narratives the empire was selling. He cares about honoring the tradition. But in his attempt to honor the tradition, I think he lost sight of the heart of the tradition. The heart of the Sabbath is people, not protocol. And their liberation from that which binds them. The story of Exodus and the law that came after that is the tradition. Sabbath is for people. And their liberation from that which binds them so that they can find rest and praise their God. Jesus does not break the Sabbath, but restores its life-giving possibilities. You see, as well-intentioned as he was, the synagogue leader's commitments kept him from seeing this woman, this bent-over woman, kept him from allowing her story, her experience, her suffering, to make a claim on him, to make a reclaimed on his agenda. And it kept him from getting close to her, from being drawn into proximity to her, and helping to free her. I think this religious leader, who in many ways was doing the best he could, invites us to consider what are the things that keep us from seeing. What are the things that keep us from allowing someone to make a claim on our time? To make a claim on our agenda? That keep us from being drawn into proximity? Hoping to free them. Maybe it's theology. It's piety and tradition. It's something else. Perhaps it's fear. Fear of what their claim on us might mean for us. Maybe it's anxiety over having our priorities and our agendas upset by them. Maybe it's that very real fear for our own future of our own safety and security. Jesus laid his hands on her, and immediately she stood up straight. I'm challenged by Debbie Thomas's questions. What would it be like? Church were known for this. Restoring stature, dignity, community, and honor to people who are bent over in all of the terrible ways the world has bent us over. Because we are surrounded by people who are bent over. Real and metaphorical ways, bent over by circumstances that consist of, that diminish them, that distort them, that wound them. And sometimes we are the ones who are bent over. Bent over by sickness, by fears for the future, by debt, by the stories and narratives that others try to impose on our lives, bent over by anxiety, by violence, by ideology and politics, by white supremacy, by patriarchy, by theology. Thanks be to God, Jesus is all about our unbending. As one person put it, all about our standing tall. Our finding our places so that we can praise the God who is in the business of unbinding. Doesn't always look the way we expect. Sure. As followers of the one who set the captives free so that they could worship their God, how are we being invited to be about the work of unbending? How are we being invited to see those who are bent over? How are we being invited to allow them to make a claim on our time, on our energy, on our agendas, on our schedules? How are we being invited to get close, to get proximate, to not simply make a proclamation, but to get close enough to reach out? The one who desires